Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. You know, I'm looking at this list here. It's quite a list. 44 public airports going to receive a portion of $3.2 million allocated recently. What are those projects? So what is this airport infrastructure in Montana? What's the need? I mean, you're looking at Harlem, Montana, Geraldine, Montana, a $15,000 grant for Harlem. Geraldine, it was $8,000. These are smaller airports. There's larger ones as well. Lewistown had a $200,000 grant out of this pot. Kalispell, it was near $500,000. There's also a loan program here. We're welcoming Tim Robertson, chair of the Montana Aeronautics Board, to join us here today to talk about overall our infrastructure and our airways across Montana. And Chairman Robertson, how are you, sir?
Good morning, Tom. Great to be here. Thank you very much.
Thanks for being here. Should mention, Tim, just recently named chair as well. And then yesterday, the legislature had to approve some of these board appointments. There are nine members. I'm not sure, and I wasn't fully aware of the Aeronautics Board in the state of Montana. And what it does, and it runs through the Department of Transportation, Tim. I think it's wise to have a special Aeronautics Board in the Transportation Department because flying's a whole lot different.
It is. It's a whole lot different. In this day and age, they like to write a software program or an algorithm to do things like allocate dollars. And in our case in Montana, I think we're a great state in that we keep people involved and make some great decisions on the fly as we go when we hear about all of these grant applications and try to be as fair as we can across the state. So it works really well.
What does again, just kind of give us an overview of the Aeronautics Board. And then, as I noted here, 3.2 million, 44 public airports, but there were 49, I think, or more that had 123 out of 140. Here it is. The board approved funding for 123 of the 140. That submit a proposal. So there's a lot of need out there.
There is. Montana has a lot of airports. There are 128 public use airports in Montana. Wow. And they get federal aid goes to 73 of those. A lot of those don't get federal aid. And so the Aeronautics Board, which is, as you said, nine members appointed by the governor, confirmed by the legislature, all volunteers and with different areas of expertise within aviation in the state of Montana. And so we gather once a year to review applications from the airports. It's open to all the airports and all the public use airports in Montana. This year we got 49 states applied, $5.7 million worth of requests. And we were able to give a vast majority of those some money. Most of that money goes to match federal grants. So the feds give a lot of public use airports some money from the FAA. They have something called non-primary entitlement as an example. They give those grants out, and then there has to be a local share that has to match those grants by the local airports, whether that be the county board or the airport authority or the city that owns the airport. And coming up with that money is what's so challenging. Yeah. And so the great thing is that the Aeronautics Board can spread this money far and wide, very fairly all across the state to affect the greatest possible impact statewide. And that's what we did. I'm really honored to be one of those nine people that sits around a table in a big open meeting every February, usually January, February in Helena. And we review these over the course of 2 days. We slog through all these different applications and talk about them openly. And then we sit down and use our best judgment to be fair in distributing these funds.
You must just learn a ton during those 2 days.
Did.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to get into
the need is.
Go ahead.
The need is wide all across the state. This is a massive infrastructure investment that we have in Montana. But most of this is asphalt paving, and that deteriorates over time with sun and weather. and it has to be renewed and it has to be rejuvenated, we'll call it rehabilitated. And so that's a big, huge piece of what we fund.
I can appreciate that. And I think that kind of keeps it simple, though, doesn't it? We got to repave. Then you're not too bad. You're not in bad shape, really.
I should say, though, that our highest priority is safety. So when we look at project requests, we're looking at safety, the safety of the traveling public, safety of aircraft and everything around them. So we start with safety as our top priority. And then we typically look at, we'll call it pavement preservation. So preserve the infrastructure that's already there. Do things like seal coat and striping that needs to be redone over time. Update airport lighting when it's appropriate. And then we can do some things that are more reconstruct in terms of runways and taxiways and aprons that need to be replaced over time. They have limited lifespan, and we need to replace those as time goes on and try to preserve that infrastructure.
I want to get into some of these here a little bit, or just whatever examples might come to mind. But let me ask first, and Tim Robertson is with us again. He's chair of the Montana Aeronautics Board. It's run out of the Department of Transportation. They actually have two divisions there in aeronautics, or they have an airport and airways bureau. And then you talked about the safety and education bureau as well. How important is it now, and especially these smaller rural airports, like I look at Geraldine or Chinook, Poplar, Montana, and there's larger ones too. You might imagine Havre and Hamilton and things like that. How important is it for tourism and the economy of those local areas nowadays?
You know, those are both important, tourism and the economy. They're very important. But, you know, I want to start with the lives of Montanans. Air ambulance is really critical.
Good.
And so a place like Plentywood, you know, when they need to move somebody to a hospital, that airport is really critical infrastructure because you need to get an airplane in and out of there quickly, and you need to have a good runway, taxiways, snow removal, good lighting so they can get in all times of the day and night. So that air ambulance and health and safety of the citizens of Montana is, in my mind, the most important thing.
Tim, thanks for bringing that up, because that's not even on my plate, really. And it should be, right? I mean, to think about that, but that came for me out of nowhere. Right. Air ambulance services. Yeah.
Yeah. We quickly forget about that. You know, I'm in Lewistown and I live close to the airport, and every time an airplane goes by, I look up because I'm a pilot and think about that. But we get air ambulance into Lewistown almost every day of the week, and multiple in many days. Mm-hmm. And so that's really critical to get from these critical care hospitals that are out in the rural parts of Montana back to the major hospitals in the big cities.
Wow.
And so that is, in my mind, probably the most important thing these rural airports can provide, is that connection to the big cities. And then from there, you can get into the things like commerce, just business. A lot of business goes through these airports. A lot of tourism goes through these airports. And by tourism, it's from little tiny Cessnas and Pipers like I fly to big jets that come and go and bring groups of people into the state for what might be pheasant hunt in the fall or elk hunting. And there's a fair amount of that. But really, the bread and butter of it, as far as I'm concerned, the everyday use of it, is this air ambulance, this package transportation around the state, those kinds of things.
Is that what the federal government responds to? Or public safety is an issue I think that is the government is responsible for. And so are these like one-to-one matching grants out of this $3.2
million? No, not at all. Actually, it's 5 to 95 or 10 to 90. So the feds, they'll fund 90 or 95% of a grant in most cases. Or of a project with a big grant, and then the locals have to come up with the rest. But we're talking big dollars, I mean, really big dollars. So Baker, as an example, was looking at rehabilitating its, when I say rehabilitating, that really means resealing, seal coating, and striping. And they had a request in this year for, about $23,000 to reseal everything. That was just the match, the local match to the federal dollars. So that project was much, much larger than that. These are big, big dollars that go into a big airport, such a big area to resurface. And so that $23,000, though, helped them match that federal grant to bring those dollars to, into the state. What? And that's what we work really hard to do as a board, is make sure that when that federal grant is available, we match as much of it as we can. We don't want to miss the opportunity for these local airports to get that federal funding.
You know, and this is actually a pretty good list here, too, when you talk about there's 128 across the state. This is a list of 44, and they're all public use airports as well. So, and I got like a minute and a half here, and then we'll talk more about, you know, some of those needs. But in general, you know, what's the status of flying? Is it unique to fly in Montana? What are the challenges?
Challenges like any flying, certainly we have big distances and we have weather. Our weather changes quickly, and so we really need to be careful about that. And we have big distances between airports. You know, in states that are more compact, we'll call it, with a population, you have airports everywhere, and there's always a spot to land if you run into a problem. In the state of Montana, you've got big distances between things. That might be a big challenge out here. So we need to make sure these airports are in great shape, so if an aircraft has to land, it's got a good place to do that.
How's staffing at the airports?
Staffing is sparse, I'll tell you. We here in Lewistown, we run the whole airport with two people. That's not uncommon. The whole aeronautics division is only nine people. There are nine people on staff that run that whole thing. It's a super lean staff.
Well, and you guys are all volunteers, like you said, as well.
And the airport, board is nine volunteers.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. When people hear I'm a pilot, they, you know, if they're a pilot, they go, well, what do you fly? They want to know what your plane is. What do you fly? What do you fly, Tim?
Oh, I fly an old 1954 Piper Super Cub and a 1961 Cessna 182 are the two things I fly the most.
That sounds like a ton of fun. Tim Robertson is a pilot, but Tim is also the chair of the Montana Aeronautics Board. We're talking about infrastructure across the state of Montana. And Tim, it's not something we dig into all that often, but I think everybody has a connection to their airports and to the infrastructure, so to speak. So thank you for being here. I appreciate that. And before I ask you about a flying story, let's get into, you talked about rehabilitation for a lot of this money. You talked about some matching grants as well. You know, where does this $3.2 million that the state allocated, that was not from income tax, I don't think. Where'd that money come from?
Yeah, you're right on with that. You know, that money comes from the aircraft users themselves. It comes from aircraft aviation fuel tax. So back in 2019, there was some, in this legislative session, there were some changes made, and it really refocused the aviation fuel tax. It increased it very slightly from 4 cents to 5 cents, but it refocused where that money goes. But really, that $3.1 million comes directly from fuel tax, aviation fuel tax. So we're not dipping in anybody's pocket that isn't flying airplanes or using these aircraft or flying on airlines. It's all that fuel that's used gets taxed, and that money comes back, and it gets put back into the aviation system here in Montana. Real clean use of the money.
Let's get into what you talked to me about the rehabilitation, but what are the infrastructure needs for the state of Montana? How do we, you know, move the ball forward, get to the next level, so to speak, with our airports?
Well, that's an interesting question. Right. I think it's just a slow, challenging process of making sure that we take those dollars and stretch them as far as we can and as wide as we can. And do it as fairly as we can across the state. You know, we got these big airports that do a phenomenal job of bringing a lot of passengers into Montana with the airlines. We're seeing huge growth in that and huge investment, big new terminal buildings, some new asphalt in places for runways and so forth. But really a huge investment on those big seven big city airports. The problem is that we've got all these small airports too, and they need to survive just as well. So, and they're really limited. Local tax dollars are really limited to put into those airports. And so, you know, this fuel tax is critical for us to put that back into all those small airports and some of the large airports. But really we focus the most on the small airports that really don't have other sources of revenue.
Well, and what's the day in the life of Montana's small airports? You got Chester here, Malta, Scobie, Terry, Geraldine, Hot Springs. I mean, these are all airports that are going to receive some of this grant funding, some substantial as well with the federal match. But what's a day in the life of a small airport in Montana like?
Well, it depends on where you are. You know, if it's kind of a slow day, but it might support ag operations with a lot of spray pilots coming and going. As well as air ambulance might come in and out of there. They need to keep that field open. And when it's snowing and it's really tough, they need good snow removal equipment to keep that airport open. And then they've obviously got, in the summertime, you're chasing gophers and cutting grass and making sure those runways are clean. So there's a lot of work like that for a very few people that do most of that work. And then you have really busy airports. You know, the two that come to mind that are maybe in the West would be Deer Lodge and Hamilton. Deer Lodge is getting a huge amount of jet traffic these days into that airport. They've been doing everything they can to get more land, to acquire more land around their airport to lengthen those runways, remove obstructions, put in fuel farm. They're doing a lot of things to foster the growth of that tourism. But then you have, on the other side of things, Hamilton Airport, which has, I think, about 100 aircraft based there, 96 airplanes, I believe, based there. Mm-hmm. 78 of those are little single-engine airplanes. But then they have this huge aerial firefighting piece that the U.S. Forest Service uses that as a base for firefighting. And so it takes a lot of money to keep a separate apron. They're working right now on $1 million expansion of an apron, and they came to us looking for a grant, and we were able to give them a little bit of that. We weren't able to give them a huge amount because the dollars only went so far, but we gave them what we could toward the Hamilton Airport to expand that apron so that the firefighting traffic could kind of avoid conflict with the general public traffic. But as we all know, when things blow up in the fire world, we need aviation, and we really need those pilots out there flying safely from airport to fire back to airport.
Tim Robertson again with us here, chair of the Montana Aeronautics Board. Firefighting is another one of those aspects as well. I think we understand we got to have good airports, but we just think it all focuses, you know, on Missoula, so to speak. But I suppose there's an effort to try and spread that around a little bit. Talk about the airport network. Talk about how they all work together.
Yeah, you know, the firefighting would be a good example with the network. I'm here in Lewistown, and if there's fire up around Fort Peck, suddenly we see a lot of aircraft come in here to Lewistown and base out of Lewistown to go fight fire. And then if it's further in the southeast, they might jump over and base out of Miles City. As an example, I think Miles City and Glendive are two places that I think Miles City, more than anything, they pop in and out of there. Base out of there, but they bounce around from airport to airport all over the state. Those small engine, single engine air tanker seats and the bigger aircraft that you see, even the water bombers that Senator Shuhi's company, Bridger Airspace, flies that go out and put out fires with the big water bombers here in the state.
The Essential Air Service. Now that's something that's been around for a while. Mm-hmm. It comes. Mm-hmm. It's a different pot of money from the federal mm-hmm. government, and it's something that I think our delegation, everybody out west, has to defend from time to time. Talk about how, from the aeronautics division standpoint, Essential Air Service. Give us an update of status on that.
You know, I have to be honest with you, Tom. I'm not an expert on Essential Air Service. It's not something the Aeronautics Board deals with.
Right.
So I would be in deep water if I suddenly started talking about that. What I can tell you is we lost it here in Lewistown a number of years ago. We just didn't have the employments, and we lost it here in Lewistown. And it's really missed because we drive 2+ hours to get to an airport, to a big commercial service airport. But I know, you know, when we had it, and I know the other airports that do have it, with these distances, it's just critical that we have something. I spent the early part of my life in the Midwest in Wisconsin, and I could drive either direction 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, and get to two different big airports. And in fact, I lived 15 minutes from my front door to the terminal building at a big airport for many years. That was a real convenience. Move out here and you're 2 hours away. And I was a business person for many years, flew around the country. And boy, it adds a lot to get to that big airport. It adds a day of travel basically to go back and forth. And so that essential air service is, in my mind, critical. I wish we had more of it. I wish our federal delegation could get us more. I think they do everything they can, but I wish they could do more here in Montana.
Yeah, and I know every appropriation cycle, it's sort of up in question, but it is very vital for us here. Kind of want to talk a little bit about a flying story. I don't know why, but I think we always have had this fascination with flying. Number one, we're ground creatures. We can't do it without some mechanical help. And so, you know, all the science, and it's just fascinating in that regard. But almost everybody has a flying story that they like to share. Some pilots, they push the edge a little bit. Others, you know, stuff happens up in the air. What's kind of your experience flying, Tim?
Well, I'm a pretty pedestrian pilot in many respects. I fly small for the most part. I've flown small private airplanes, Cessnas and Pipers, and small stuff. My flying story is probably more of a near miss for me, but not for my flying buddy who did a great job. I retired a few years ago, and I always had a dream of flying an old Warbird, kind of a Korean War, World War II style Warbird like we all see in the movies. And yeah. I was really fortunate to be able to get my hands on an old old military aircraft called a T-28, which is a big trainer, 1,400 horsepower military trainer. And my flying buddy here in Lewistown, Pete Smith, and I both, we went in together on this airplane and got this thing flying, and we had to go get trained in it. And on the day of our final exams, a big airplane, mind you, and you have an examiner in the back seat, just two people in the airplane, and we were up flying. And I did my exam first and got it out of the way and passed my check ride. And then Pete took the airplane up in very next flight, 20 minutes later, took the airplane up and was just starting his examination routine of flying. And that big 1,400 horsepower engine started eating itself up and lost power, and he and the examiner had to fly the thing to an airport, get to an airport if they could before they completely lost power. And they just barely made it and got down to one of these small reliever airports, just a small emergency field, we'll call it, and put it on the ground. And the prop came to an abrupt stop when the engine froze as they taxied off. And so that's as close as I've ever come. It was quite an experience in a lesson in why these big warbirds are the hobbies of very, very wealthy people. We had to replace an engine, and it winded me a bit, but it was a lot of fun.
Thanks for sharing that. I appreciate that. What is the future then? I mean, you know, they talk about electric airplanes. I don't see how I wouldn't go up in an electric airplane. I don't care. I don't know that the technology is there for those types of things. But what is the future of aviation?
Well, I think aviation has really been strong in the last few years. It's really started finding new excitement. And I will say that electric aviation is probably in our future. Technology is advancing quickly in that realm. We'll still probably, I'll always have a gasoline-powered airplane. I'm sure, if for no other reason than nostalgia of it, but I don't think they're going away anytime soon. We're using jet fuel and have gas. But I do see that technology is making it a much safer, much, much safer, much easier entry hobby or sport or commercial means of transportation. So I do think we're going to see a lot of advances in that. We can just continue to find as many young pilots as we can and get them trained up. And that's our biggest challenge right now, is getting more people to stay in the career of aviation.
Understood.
Our aeronautics department, by the way, does a great job of trying to foster more young people and people in general coming into that world of aviation for a career.
So, it's the aeronautics board, Department of Transportation. You can go and log on there and get more information about it. One more thing that we kind of shared as we were talking off air about, you talked about, what is it, 128 public use airports in Montana. There's a private airport network that can also come in a pinch.
There are quite a few. They think roughly 350 private airports.
Wow.
And there are a few. I'll mention one that's really pretty neat. It's called Heller Bottom. It's a public use, privately owned. So it's open to the public, privately owned, but public use airport that's right down on the Missouri River. Heller Bottom, it's just northeast of Winifred. Lawrence Smith out of Great Falls is the guy that made that possible and owns that airport. It's a phenomenal spot. We get a lot of people that fly into the breaks and use that airport. It's a really neat grass strip. It needs to be used at the right time of the day or time of the year when the ground is hard, but yeah. It's a great spot.
You ever landed on a grass strip or something that felt like, wow, they need to get a rake on that thing?
We do it all the time. Yeah. Gophers don't help us. Do it all the time. Grass and gravel and stuff are great surfaces to land on here in Montana. Montana is just a wonderful state for small aviation. We just have such great places to fly to and so many great strips to fly into.
Tim Robertson, it's been a pleasure chatting with you, Tim, about this stuff and getting into something that we don't get into all that often, but it does. It touches us all in the state of Montana. So thank you for your dedication in that and look forward to chatting with you down the road, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, Tim Robertson, again, chair of the Montana Aeronautics Board. He is in Lewistown, but $3.2 million to around 44 public airports. It's going to help you all out there. Again, my thanks to Tim. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.